ಸ್ಯಾದಂಗೀತಾಮೃತಂ ಲೋಕತ್ರಯೋಪಕಾರಾಯ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾತ್ಮನೇ ನಮಃ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ. ವೆಲ್ಕಮ್ ಬ್ಯಾಕ್ ಟು ಅವರ್ ಭಗವದ್ಗೀತಾ ಕೋರ್ಸ್. ದ ಸೆಕೆಂಡ್ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್. ವಿ ಆರ್ ನೌ ಮೂವಿಂಗ್ ಟು ದಿ ಎಂಡ್ ಆಫ್ ದಿ ಸೆಕೆಂಡ್ ಆನ್ಸರ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದೆನ್ ಟು ಥರ್ಡ್ ಆನ್ಸರ್. ವಿಲ್ ಸ್ಟಾರ್ಟ್ ದಟ್ ಒನ್. ಸೊ ಸೆಕೆಂಡ್ ಆನ್ಸರ್ ವಾಸ್ ದ ಫೋರ್ ಕ್ವೆಶ್ಚನ್ಸ್ ವೇರ್ ಚಿತ್ತಪ್ರಜ್ಞೆಯ ಕಾ ಭಾಷಾ ಕಿಂ ಪ್ರಭಾಷೇತ. ಸೊ ಆ್ಯಕ್ಚುಲಿ ಕಾ ಭಾಷಾ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಕಿಂ ಪ್ರಭಾಷೇತ, ದೇ ಆರ್ ವೆರಿ ರಿಲೇಟೆಡ್ ಕ್ವೆಶ್ಚನ್ಸ್. ಸೊ ಕಾ ಭಾಷಾ, ದ ಕ್ವೆಶ್ಚನ್ ಇಸ್ ಆನ್ಸರ್ಡ್ ಇನ್ 55. ದೆನ್ ಕಿಂ ಪ್ರಭಾಷೇತ, ವಾಟ್ ಇಸ್ ದ ಲ್ಯಾಂಗ್ವೇಜ್, ದಟ್ ಇಸ್ ಆನ್ಸರ್ಡ್ ಇನ್ 56 ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ 57. ಸೊ ಆ್ಯಕ್ಚುಲಿ ವೇ ಡಿಸ್ಕಸ್ ಇನ್ ಥರ್ಡ್ ಕ್ವೆಶ್ಚನ್ ನೌ. ದಟ್ ಇಸ್ ಆನ್ಸರ್ಡ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ 58 to 63. ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದೆನ್ ಆಫ್ಟರ್ ದ್ಯಾಟ್ ದಟ್ ವಾಸ್ ಕಿಮ್ ಆಸೀತ, ಹೌ ಡಸ್ ಅ ಪರ್ಸನ್ ಕಂಟ್ರೋಲ್ ದ ಸೆನ್ಸಸ್, ಹೌ ಡಸ್ ಅ ಪರ್ಸನ್ ರೆಗ್ಯುಲೇಟ್ ದ ಸೆನ್ಸಸ್. ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ದೆನ್ ಕಿಂ ವ್ರಜೇತ ವಿಲ್ ಬಿ ಆನ್ಸರ್ಡ್ ಫ್ರಮ್ 64 ಆನ್ವರ್ಡ್ಸ್. ಸೊ ಲೆಟ್ಸ್ ಲುಕ್ ಎಟ್ 59 ನೌ. ಲೆಟ್ಸ್ ವಿ ಡಿಸ್ಕಸ್ ಯು 59 ಆ್ಯಕ್ಚುಲಿ. ಸೊ ಲೆಟ್ಸ್ ಸ್ಟಾರ್ಟ್ ವಿತ್ 60 ನೌ. ಯತ್ತತೋ ಹಿ ಅಪಿ ಕೌಂತೇಯ ಪುರುಷಸ್ಯ ವಿಪಶ್ಚಿತಃ ಇಂದ್ರಿಯಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಮಾಥೀನಿ ಹರಂತಿ ಪ್ರಸಭಂ ಮನಃ. ಯತ್ತತೋ, ಯತ್ತತೋ ಇಸ್ ಟು ಎಂಡೆವರ್. ಹಿ ಅಪಿ ಕೌಂತೇಯ, ಸೊ ಕೌಂತೇಯ ಓ ಅರ್ಜುನ, ಈವನ್ ವೆನ್ ಅ ಪರ್ಸನ್ ಇಸ್ ಎಂಡೆವರಿಂಗ್, ಸರ್ಟನ್ಲಿ ಎಂಡೆವರಿಂಗ್, ಪುರುಷಸ್ಯ ವಿಪಶ್ಚಿತಃ, ವಿಚ್ ಕೈಂಡ್ ಆಫ್ ಪರ್ಸನ್ ವಿಪಶ್ಚಿತಃ, ಪರ್ಸನ್ ಹೂ ಹ್ಯಾಸ್ ಡಿಸ್ಕ್ರಿಮಿನೇಷನ್, who has the capacity to know what is right and what is wrong. And even for such a person, indriyani pramathini, pramatha is like madness, storm. So indriyani pramathini, the wild and impetuous senses, haranti prasabham manaha, haranti means they drag away, they steal away, prasabham manaha, so they drag away thoroughly by force, prasabham manaha. So now there are several important features of this verse. Krishna here is not talking about a ordinary person who is controlled by the senses. So materialistic people think that the goal of their life is to enjoy their senses, so often they let themselves be dragged by their senses. So such people are who are interested in material sense gratification, even if that material sense gratification is by religious means. You know, today, that means there are vikarmis, there are karmis, and then there are yogis. So, vikarmis are those who chase after sense gratification and defy the principles of dharma in the process. So, for example, say people who have extramarital, premarital relationships and that sort of thing, those people are vikarmis. And those people who are karmis, those are people who seek sense gratification but by religious means. So Krishna has talked about them in the previous section. In 2.43 he talks about they aspire for swarga. For what purpose? Kamaatmanah swarga paraha. And there he has used for them the word avipaschitaha. Yamimam pushpitam vacham pravadantya vipaschitaha vedavadarataha partha nanyad asti iti vadinaha. So those people think that they are being attracted by the flowery words of the Vedas. They think that the sense gratification promised in the Vedas is the in swarga is the ultimate goal of life. And nānyadastitivādhinā, they say there is nothing else. So such people are avipaschitaha. So the avipaschitaha are the people who do not understand that there is a higher goal of life beyond sense gratification. That sense gratification ultimately keeps one in bodily consciousness, and the higher happiness is available by rising to spiritual consciousness. So these are avipaschitaha people, are the karmis. Now, higher than them are the yogis. The yogis are vipaschitaha. They understand that material enjoyment leads to suffering, leads to bondage. It perpetuates illusion. Therefore, I must break free from it. So even such people, Krishna is saying, those who are vipaschitaha, those who have discrimination, those who can understand the difference between matter and spirit. And based on that differentiation, they try to pursue spiritual reality, spiritual self-realization. So even such people, so they have vision, they have discrimination, and then yatato, they are also striving. That means there are these two aspects. There is vipaschitaha, internally they have discrimination, and internally they also have it, they have that endeavoring, they are trying to endeavor. But even such people, what happens to them? Haranti prasavam manaha. What are they trying to do? They are trying to control their senses. They are trying to control themselves, but the senses are so wild, the senses drag away the mind. Now it's interesting, Krishna is saying senses drag away the mind. So let's try to understand this point now. So first point is that these are not ordinary materialists Krishna is talking about. They are not vikarmis, they are not karmis, they are yogis. Those who are vipaschitaha and those who are yatato. So they have knowledge and they are striving to live according to knowledge. Even they are dragged away. So most of us fall in this category, or actually this category of people being dragged away by the senses may be a little higher than what we are also. You know, we often pursue sense gratification also by within the precincts of dharma. But here somebody is trying to break free from sense gratification. What about such a person? Krishna says over here that such a person, so there is a hierarchy. There are the senses, there are the sense objects. So okay, the sense objects are here, the senses are here, and the mind is here. So we connect with the sense objects through the senses. For example, the eyes see some beautiful form, the tongue wants to taste some delicious food item. So senses come in contact with sense objects. Now the senses are internally connected with the mind. In fact, the mind is the center of all the senses. Shrotram chakshu sparshanam cha rasanam ghranam eva cha adishtaya manaschayam vishayan upasevate. So Krishna describes in 15.9 that the five senses, shrotra, chakshu, sparsha, rasa and ghrana. So the ears, the sensation of sight, then touch, fragrance, smell and taste. All these are centered around the mind, just as we could say that the five fingers are centered around the palm. So now the senses are internally connected to the mind. And Krishna is saying, so if you consider this hierarchy, there are the sense, okay, the sense objects are here outside, the senses are here, and the mind is inside. So the senses drag away the mind. That means the mind is, when we expose ourselves externally to sense objects, then the desires that are created by that, so that by that perception of the sense objects, by that the mind is forcefully drawn towards that. And when the mind is drawn towards that, then our desires get further ignited, fueled, they become inflamed. And then we just, like a moth drawn towards fire, we are drawn towards the sense objects. So here Krishna is giving a warning about if one just simply, if now the 58th verse, he said that one should withdraw the senses just like a tortoise withdraws the limbs. But here Krishna is saying that if one is striving to do that, but somehow if one, the senses are so powerful that when senses perceive the sense objects, then tuck, senses drag the mind outwards. Haranti prasabham manaha. So this is quite a sobering verse to contemplate. Such is the power of the senses. And even when we want to control, still we are dragged away. And we have all experienced this. As we strive for sense control, we find our senses just dragging us forcefully, desperately. Often they seem to make us helpless entirely. So Prabhupada gives in these purports the example of Vishwamitra Muni. He was in the forest and trying to practice austerity, but when he heard the ankle bells of Menaka, then just that thought agitated him. And then he just forgot everything else and he got attracted. Now we may think, how is this? If somebody has renounced the world, somebody is practicing austerity, how is it that just jingling of some ankle bells can cause a person to get just dragged down like this. So actually, it is not just jingling of the ankle bells. That is just a sound. But that sound, when it enters the mind, it kindles the imagination. So now, when the imagination is triggered, it bursts forth. And then when the imagination bursts forth upwards, it just fills us with fantasies of pleasure. And then we are dragged away. So often this principle of sense control is talked from the male perspective, that the male should not be attracted to the female. But actually the Bhagavatam also talks from the female perspective also. You know that a woman who is too attracted to a man, then it's like the woman is like a deer and the man is like the hunter. The woman will be shot by the deer. So there are examples from both perspectives. Most of the time the scriptures talk from the male perspective because the male body is considered to be more suitable for self-realization. That's why we have examples of Vishwamitra Muni and Menaka. But in general, the principle is that when we see such things, we have to understand that there is a generic description about sense objects over here. So what will be sense objects for males and females will be different. But in general, the principle is that the sense objects will drag us down. So Haranti Prasabham Manaha, forcefully drag the mind away. Then after describing this, then Krishna, now Prabhupada in this purport talks about, Prabhupada continues the process of Krishna conscious description. For what purpose? Srila Prabhupada is continuing from the previous verse where he talked about Param Drishtvani Vartate, getting a higher taste. What is that higher taste? Prabhupada continues that flow of thought in his purport and he gives an example of how a devotee, an exalted devotee, can get such a higher taste that everything else becomes forgotten. So he quotes Yamanacharya. This is a well-known verse which Prabhupada would often quote. Yada udhi mama cheta krishna padar vinde navanavara siddhamanya udhitam rantu masid tadavadi patnari sangame smaryamane bhavati mukha vikara shushtu nishti vanamcha. So he's saying that from the time I have started relishing the joy of Krishna consciousness, so yad avadhi, from that time amachetaha, my consciousness Krishna padaravinde, the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, when I remember it, what happens? Navanavarasadhamanya, I get new rasas, new mellows in that. Udyatam rantum asit, so rantum, I'm enjoying, relishing that. Tadavdhi, from that time onwards, tadavdhi, vatanari sangame smaryamane, when I think of sex pleasure, bhavati mukha vikaraha, my mouth becomes twisted. Generally when we see something which is very displeasing, very irritating, even disgusting, then mukha vikaraha, the mouth becomes twisted. Shushtu nishtivanam cha, and I spit at the thought. So there are several important points in this verse. First of all, from the point of view of material sense gratifiers, it's very jolting. You know, that which most people in the world are dreaming and fantasizing about, somebody says, I spit at it. It's very jolting for people. How is this possible? What is this being talked about over here? So this indicates that the pleasure of Krishna consciousness is so lofty that as compared to that, everything else seems trivial, insignificant. And even if that is such a higher pleasure, and this is such, even if they assume that this is a lower pleasure, why would one be disgusted at it? What is the reason for disgust and spitting at it? Actually, for a devotee, anything that distracts one from Krishna is actually a source of danger, a source of distress, a source of dismay. So, when a devotee thinks of so long, for such a trivial pleasure, I have let myself become distracted from Krishna. So that's how the devotee feels revolted by that. And that's how the devotee turns away from it. Now, another significant point in this verse is that Yamunacharya says that actually, since the time I started relishing the thoughts of Krishna, since that time when the Nari Sangame Smaryamane, that when I get the thought of sex pleasure, I, you know, it's interesting that even when one is relishing the joy of Krishna consciousness, even at that time, one may get the thought of sex pleasure. So, it's not that we should not mistake that just because I am getting bad thoughts, that means I have to fall down. Actually, because of the world that we live in, now Yamunacharya was living nearly 1,000 years ago, so at that time the culture was much, much purer. But now there is so much impurity. But even at that time, because we are living in the material world, we may get exposed to things which provoke us, which inject thoughts of sensuality within us. And even from our own past memory, sometimes something may just come up. So, sometimes when we just get some bad thoughts, we start thinking, oh, I'm so fallen. These bad thoughts are coming, what should I do? I have to succumb to them. No, we don't have to. Actually, we see such a radical difference here that when the thoughts come in, nothing doing. So that nothing doing is spoken in the most assertive, forceful way by saying, I spit at the thought. Mukhavikara shushtu nishtivanach. So what changes between an advanced devotee and a new devotee is that not necessarily that there will be no impure thoughts coming. Impure thoughts may come, but the advanced devotee's response to those thoughts is radically different from that of the neophyte devotee, the struggling sadhaka, initial stages. So generally speaking, what happens is, the serious devotee, when the thought comes, says, no, get lost. The materialistic person, when the thought comes, welcome, I was just waiting for you. So welcome, welcome. So, yes, yes, welcome. So, these are two extremes, the pure devotee and the materialist. A sadhaka is somewhere in between. Sometimes the sadhaka says, yes, come. Sometimes says, no, no. And most of the time sadhaka says, wait, wait, not now. Maybe later we'll see. When nobody's around, when nobody will find out what I'm going, then we'll see. So, that's how it happens. So, now, if we see everybody, so there is a pure devotee here, there is a materialist here, and a sadhaka who is moving from material life towards towards devotion and ultimately pure devotion. So now the essential difference is both are exposed to the temptations. Of course, the materialist may be exposed to temptations much, much more because they are, that's what they want to do. And that's why they search out temptations. The pure devotee avoids as much as possible, but still being in the material world, we'll all be exposed to temptations. So the difference is here there's welcome, here there is nothing doing. So we have to make this journey from welcome to nothing doing. So essentially, even if we get wrong thoughts, that doesn't mean that we have to fall down. What we have to do is, we have to drive out those wrong thoughts. And how do we drive them out? By filling the mind with Krishna. When the mind becomes filled with Krishna, then the immoral thoughts, the sensual thoughts, they don't get any time over there. They are driven away. They are driven out from the consciousness. So in this way, actually, a devotee moves from this stage of materialism to the stage of pure devotion. It's a long journey, but it's not an impossible journey. Every time when the temptation comes and we say no to it, we are growing stronger. We are moving upwards. And we are coming closer and closer to Krishna each time we turn away from the temptations. And we turn towards Krishna. So Prabhupada accuses the example of, there is a letter of Prabhupada where it says, to get thoughts is not wrong, but to act on the thoughts, that is wrong. And there Prabhupada gives a very striking definition of intelligence in that letter. He says, intelligence means to kill the thoughts before they grow into actions. Intelligence means to kill the thoughts before they grow into action. So thoughts will come. So we will see in the next verse how thoughts can grow to disastrous proportions if we are not careful about them. But essentially, if we don't let the thoughts grow into actions, then the problem is far, far lesser. So, that's how we can move forward in our spiritual life. Now, Prabhupada explains the further parole. For the example of higher taste, what does he say here? That it is as if a hungry man has satisfied his hunger by a sufficient quantity of nutritious eatables. So, In the previous verse, the word was niraharasya. One feels as if I don't have any ahar. But when we turn towards Krishna and fix our mind on Krishna, then we get such a deeper, inner, richer happiness that we feel, yes, I've got this. I don't need anything else. I'm satisfied. Bhakti paresha anubhava virakti ranyatra cha. The Bhagavatam says that bhakti, when practices bhakti, then bhakti leads to the para-isha anubhav, the experience of the Supreme Lord. When that experience of the Supreme Lord is there, para-isha anubhav, then there is virakti-ranyatra cha. One becomes detached from other external things. One doesn't feel the need for anything else. Because one gets a deeper, richer inner happiness. Virakti-ranyatra cha. So this is what Yamunacharya is experiencing. And then Srila Prabhupada quotes Maharaj Ambarish here. And actually Srila Prabhupada just continues talking in his purports. So in a sense, Prabhupada refers to certain things in the verses, but Prabhupada is more concerned about telling us how to apply those verses in our life. And therefore his purport just continues. So he has mentioned Ambarish Maharaj in this verse, and he will elaborate on Ambarish Maharaj as pastime in the next verse. So now let's look at the next verse. So now, here, this is the last part of the So now Krishna will describe how a person may practice spiritual life. How can one get the higher taste? So till now he has said that we should all seek the higher taste. So how does one get the higher taste? That he'll describe in the next verse. Tani sarvani sanyamya yukta sita matparaha vashehi asendriyani tasya pradya pratishthita. So tani sarvani sanyamya. So tani sarvani, all these senses sanyamya, controlling. Yukta asita matparaha. When one with this situates oneself. Another word asita is related to the question. Kim asita? That was there at 2.54. So Krishna said yukta asita. So when one engages the senses and situates oneself thus, how does one engage the senses? Matparaha. Fixing the mind on me. The first place in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna is referring to himself. Mat paraha, mat paraha. Krishna is saying over here that fix the mind on me, Krishna. This is the first, the Acharya said, this is the first drop of bhakti that Krishna has dropped in the Bhagavad Gita till now. So till now Krishna has not referred to himself directly. And even here, till now Krishna has been the teacher of sense control. Yes, we all have to control our senses. But from here onwards, Krishna starts saying, I am the object of the control senses. I am the object on which the control senses should be fixed. Tani sarvani sanyamya. Control all those senses. Yukta asita matparaha. And then, it being situated thus, fix the sense, fix yukta asita matparaha. Fix the consciousness on me. When you do this, vashihi asendriyani, then you will be able to bring the senses under your conquest. Such a person who can do it is tasya pragya pratishthita. So in a sense, this verse is talking about three stages. Tani sarvani sanyamya. So sanyamya means actually sort of restraint or control. Now when we need to control or restrain, when there is some opposition force which prevents us from controlling, which is opposing us, that's why we need to control. So this Krishna is talking here about a stage of struggle. In that stage of struggle, we have to have some level of base control. Tani sarvani sanyamya. And that alone is not enough. After that, yukta sita matparaha. One, after that, fixes the consciousness on Krishna. And when fixes the consciousness on Krishna, then after that, vashehi asendriyani. One after that, conquer the senses. So first there is control, then there is concentration, and then there is conquest. So control is what? control the senses. Just like when we are practicing devotional service, when we want to say, we have to have some basic level of self-control. So then we start practicing. If you want to chant Hare Krishna, if you want to go to a temple, then if even in the temple our eyes are running here and there, who has come, how are they dressed, what are they doing, then where can we, how can we experience anything spiritual in the temple? Even in the temple, we will be just staying in bodily consciousness, looking at how, who is dressed and who, what, how one looks and what one is doing. So if we want to experience Krishna in the temple, at least some level of sense control is required. Now, that is not easy, but that is not impossible. That level of self-control, everybody can have. So tani sarvani sanyamya, first there is control. And then there is concentration. And one concentrates the mind on Krishna. And after one concentrates the mind on Krishna, then there is conquest. Control, concentration, conquest. So, vashe means, in this way we conquer them. So, that which was, so like the horses, first there has to be sanyamya. So, if a horse is raving wildly, and a horse is neighing wildly, and is completely berserk. So, at that time a horse trainer has to first, the horse is just threatening to run here and there, and is there and is corral, but it is unstable, but in a fence, but it's running here, running there, and if anybody goes near, tap, the horse knocks the person down. So then initially, what the horse trainer has to do is, first get a grip on the saddle, have a saddle and have a rein and try to get some grip on the horse. So that is sanyamya. So the horse is running wild, but there is some amount of restraint. And then after that, then one trains the horse, one gets the horse to understand. And actually, if it behaves itself, then it will get food, it will get nourishment, it will get love, it will be taken care of. And understand, then after that, the horse becomes calm. And then there is a vashe, then the horse is conquered. So we begin with control, and then after that, the horse focuses here and there, focus the horse, okay, you will get this hay, you will get this grass, you will get this food. Just calm down. So like that, when the mind is restless, even when Krishna is right in front of us as the deity, as the holy name, still we just can't focus and we can't see it. Here there is nourishment available for me. Here there is satisfaction available for me. So after control there is concentration. And after concentration there is conquest. Then after the senses become conquered. So Krishna says, one who does like this, such a person is tasya prajna pratishthita. Such a person is well situated. The prajna is pratishthita, the intelligence is well situated. Now after describing this, Krishna will move forward in the next verse to answer the question of Arjuna about kim vrajeta. So of course, before he goes to that, he tells what will happen if one fails to do this. So Krishna does a very smooth transition. So in asita, he also uses the word yukta. Yukta means connected or engaged. So that what is that engagement? Krishna will tell in 64. But here he is continuing the point that one has, if one fails to fix the mind on Krishna, and instead one fixes the mind on something else, when one lets the mind prey on the sense objects, then what happens? So in this verse, the primary point is that that control alone, if we are just trying to control, that will fail if we don't take it to the next steps. If we don't take it to concentration and conquest, then control itself will fail. Because control, how long can we continue it? The mind will go wild and eventually it will lock us down. So if we want to move forward from control to concentration, then we have to actually fix the mind on Krishna. And when we fix on the mind on Krishna, then gradually there will be conquest. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada talks about Durvasamuni, as about the conflict between Durvasamuni and Ambarish Maharaj. And now from the point of view of Varnashram, Durvasamuni, both in terms of Varna and Ashrama, was higher than Ambarish Maharaj. There are four Varnas, so the Kshatriyas are second, Brahmanas are first. So, Brahmanas are higher than Kshatriyas. Similarly, among the four ashramas, Ambarish Maharaj is a grihastha, Durvasamuni is a sannyasi. So, both from the Varana and the ashram point of view, Durvasamuni was higher. But, he had not done Matparaha. His mind was not fixed to Krishna. His mind was fixed on whatever kind of meditation he was doing. But at least within this pastime, he was focused more on the fact that I am a renunciate, I am a great sage, and I deserve to be honored. So his consciousness was not on Krishna. On the other hand, Ambarish Maharaj was Matparaha. And how was he Matparaha? That, for that, Srila Prabhupada quotes a series of verses from the Bhagavatam, which describe how one can fix the mind and senses on Krishna. So let us look at these verses. Savai manaha Krishna pada ravindayor vachamsi vaikuntha guna anuvarnane karau harer mandir marjana deshu shrutim chakara chutti sat kathodaye. So first and foremost, it all begins with manaha Krishna pada ravindayor. One fixes the mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. Now, we may say, how can I fix the mind on Krishna directly? Actually, at least there has to be the intention to fix the mind on Krishna. So, we need the senses, and when we engage the senses, it becomes easier to fix the mind on Krishna. But at least the intention has to be there. Yes, I want to think about Krishna. I want to fix the mind on Krishna. So then, when that intention onwards, then one starts engaging the senses also. And as the senses become engaged, then naturally the mind also becomes engaged. So let us see now how we engage the senses. Vacham sivaikunta guna anuvaranane. So vacham, with his speech, what did he do? Vaikuntha guna anuvaranane. He described the glories of Vaikuntha. Now Vaikuntha can refer to the abode of the Lord, and Vaikuntha is also one of the names of Lord Vishnu. In the Vishnu Sahasranam as well as in the 8th canto, Vaikuntha is one of the incarnations of Vishnu who appears. So he describes the glories of Vaikuntha. Karau harer mandir marjana dishu. So karau is the hands. With the hands, what did he do? Mandir marjana. He uses the hands to clean the temple. And then shruti is here. Shrutim chakara chuti sat kathodaye. So shruti chakara chuti sat kathodaye. That supreme lord is all attractive. Who is the essence of everything. Sat kathodaye. The auspicious, the eternal, the true katha of him. In this world, we are hearing the katha of so many people in this world. In the whole newspapers are actually filled with the katha of people. There's a katha of politicians, of cricketers, of business people, of scamsters, of criminals. So there are katha of so many people. But sat katha odaye, the true katha is of the Supreme Lord. So use the ears to hear that. Then Mukunda Lingalaya Darshane Drushav. So with Darshan Drushav, with the eyes, what did he do? Mukunda Lingalaya Darshana. So Linga refers to the form. Darshana. So Lingalaya, like we have Himalaya. So Himalaya is the abode of Hima, that is abode of snow. So Pustakalaya is the abode of books. It can be a bookstore, it can be a library. So Mukunda Lingalaya, that means darshan of the deity of Krishna, and not just the deity of Krishna, but also the temple of Krishna. Even the temple reminds us of Krishna. So that's why, if you see in the past, the temples would have distinctive architecture. The temples would have a spire which moves right high up. And then that reminds us of Krishna. We see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he would come to Puri, after traveling to either first time coming from Navadvip or coming after returning from South India or from his Vrindavan, North India tours, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would come back, when he would first see the tall spire, the tall tower at the top of Jagannath temple and the chakra on that, he would just offer dandavats. Because that is so that the externally seeing the temple is also auspicious. And of course, we go inside and see the deity, that is also auspicious. So he used his eyes to see the beautiful form of of the Supreme Lord Mukunda and his temple. Tadbhrutyakata sparshayanga sangamam. So what did he do with his body? Tadbhrutya. Tadbhrutya is his devotees. Katra sparshayanga sangamam. So he would touch, when the great saints, the great devotees would come, he would touch their lotus feet and take the dust on their head. So he used his body to touch the, to reverentially touch the bodies of the devotees. The Granam Chitat Pada Saroj Saurabhe Srimat Tulasya Rasanam Tadarpite. So Granam. So now Grahanam means to accept.
Chitatpad Saroj Saurabhe.
So what would he do?
The Pad Saroj, the lotus that was offered, the flowers that are offered to the Supreme Lord, he would Grahanam. He would smell those.
So now, Shrimat Tulasya Rasana Tadarpite,
and that Tulsi leaf that was offered to the Supreme Lord, he would relish that, Shrimat Tulasya.
Then beyond that, Padau Hare Kshetra Padanu Sarpane.
Padau.
So he uses his feet for what? To go to Hare Kshetra. To Hare Kshetra is the temple, it can be the holy places.
Padanu Sarpane.
He would go around, circumambulate. And reverentially use his feet in that service.
Shiro Rishikesha Padabhivandane.
And what did he would do with his head?
Shiro Rishikesha Padabhivandane.
He would use his head to offer respects to the Lord.
Rishikesha Padabhivandane.
And after that, after he offers this, so that means go and offer obeisances to the lotus feet. So we go in front of the deities and offer Dandavat Pranam. And after describing this, what is he overall describing? Ultimately,
Kamam cha dasye natu kama kamyaya yathottam shloka jana shrayarati.
So Kamam cha dasye, he made all the desires his servants.
Natu kama kamyaya,
he did not become a desirer of desirers. He did not become the servant of his desires. We'll discuss about Kama Kami later on in 2.70. When it come to that, same phrase will come.
Yathottama shloka jana shrayarati.
So in this way, Uttama shloka, that Supreme Lord, jana shrayarati, who is the shelter of all the people. So in this way, Ambarish Maharaj developed his rati. He had rati for the absolute truth, for the Uttama Shloka, the Lord who is glorified by choice poetry. Now if you look at this verse, what do we find in it? Basically, he is engaging all his sensory faculties. So let us look at which all senses are there. We have 5 Karmendriyas, we have 5 Gyanendriyas. So samplings are given to indicate how all of these he was engaging. So what are the 5 Karmendriyas? We have the 2 hands, the 2 legs. And we have the speech. There are, of course, the excretory organs, which we can't use directly in the Lord's service. They are impure and they are basically meant to export the impurities from within the body. So, he used the 2 karmendriyas, the hands and the legs and the power of speech. All these karmendriyas he used to render service to the Lord, to go to the temple, to clean the temple and to speak the glories of the Lord. So it's significant also that Ambarish Maharaj was not a Brahmana. He was a Kshatriya. And generally Kshatriyas are not supposed to preach. The Brahmanas do the preaching. Kshatriyas create the facilities for preaching. It's not that Kshatriyas don't preach absolutely. Kshatriyas do give speeches. In fact, kings are supposed to give speeches. And we see Pruthu Maharaj, when he comes back after the 99 horse sacrifices to his kingdom in 4th canto, 21st chapter, he does give instructions to his citizens. So certainly he is supposed to give instructions and counsel, and that involves giving speeches. But a Kshatriya, because the Kshatriya is caught up with the administration of the state, the Kshatriya may not, Kshatriya generally doesn't have the the time to systematically become a teacher of scripture lifelong. But still, that doesn't mean that even if one's varna is not allowing one to systematically, steadily teach scripture. So, that doesn't mean that one should not glorify the Supreme Lord. Everybody should glorify the Supreme Lord. The way one may glorify may be different. No, glorifying the Lord doesn't mean that we have to sit on a Vyasasana and give classes. We can share Krishna consciousness in various ways. We can share it with our family members, we can share it with our neighbors, our relatives, we can distribute books. All this is Vachamsi Vaikuntha Gunanuvar. And similarly, he uses Karmendriyas. So the Karmendriyas are, he used the Gyanendriyas. So he used the eyes to see the deities, he used the ears to hear the Krishna Katha, he used the tongue to taste Krishna Prasad, he used the nose to smell the flowers offered to the Lord. And he used, in this way, all the senses. He used the sense of touch,
to touch the lotus feet of the devotees. Now, what does this verse actually mean? Is it that this was all that Ambarish Maharaj was doing all the time? No. He was a king and he had kingly responsibilities. But this is demonstrative of how we can all engage ourselves and our senses in devotional service. So, he would do all these activities and say, so can we. When Rupa Goswami gives the 64 items of devotional service, it is not that one has to do only these activities. These are important activities which we have to do. But along with that, we can and should do our worldly duties also. We'll discuss about how various levels one can practice bhakti. Krishna talks about it from 12.8 to 12.12. Then we'll discuss that. But here the point is, this is an example of how we can all engage our senses in Krishna's service. And it was this steady engagement throughout, which he was doing lifelong, that enabled Ambarish Maharaj to respond maturely when the crisis came. When he was cursed by Durvasa Muni, and then there is fearful demon came from the plucked out hair and the uttered curse of Durvasa. At that time, Ambarish Maharaj neither ran away, that means he was not physically disturbed, nor did he become mentally fearful. He just stayed calm and kept the mind in Krishna. So because he was doing it throughout his life, therefore he was able to do it at this time. And it's not that suddenly when the time of crisis comes, we'll be able to remember Krishna. We shouldn't expect that. Sometimes by the grace of Krishna, when the greatest danger comes, we will realize that we are helpless and we will call out to Krishna. But sometimes it may not happen also. If we have not prepared our consciousness, then it may well happen that when the time of crisis comes, at that time, instead of remembering Krishna, we may start thinking of other things. We may start thinking of other shelters and how all those shelters have been devastated. And we may not be able to fix the mind of Krishna. In fact, what may happen is that we may become resentful. Why has Krishna done this to me? So therefore, what is illustrated over here is that Ambarish Maharaj had a lifelong engagement in devotional service. And that's how at the moment of crisis also he was able to think of Krishna. So this is the example. What is the connection of this particular passage with the verse? The verse is basically talking about control, concentration, conquest. Such a person who can do this is Prajnapratishtha. So Prabhupada is talking about how we can bring about the concentration. So concentration involves fixing the mind, but fixing the mind also involves engaging the senses. So now after describing this, now Krishna will describe how one can, if one doesn't attempt to regulate the senses in the right way, then one can fall down disastrously. So how may one may fall down? That is described in the next verse.
Dhyayato vishayan pumsaha sangaste shupajayate sangat sanjayate kamaha kamat krodho bijayate. So here Krishna is telling that when we contemplate, dhyayato vishayan pumsaha, when we contemplate in the sense objects, then what happens? Sangaste shupajayate sangha. At that time we develop attachment. When we develop attachment, sangasti shupajayate, sangat sanjayate kamaha, a strong desire comes up. So this kamaha is lust. So first there is contemplation, then there is, oh, it's nice, then there is strong desire. I'll explain this as we move forward. Then after that, when there is kama, when there is opposition, then kamat krodho bhijayate, one develops krodha, fury. Who can stop me? Nobody can stop me from enjoying. I must enjoy. And then we'll discuss both these verses together because they have a thought flow. Krodhat bhavati sammoha. Then from krodha what happens? Sammoha. Delusion comes. One forgets. One actually becomes so confused and one loses awareness of what is to be done, what is not to be done. Now when we lose awareness of what is to be done, not what is not to be done, what is normally we should refer to scripture to understand what should I do in such a situation. But
Sammoha, Smriti Vibhramaha. But when the Sammoha is very deluded, we don't think about scripture. We forget scripture. So Smriti here can refer to our memory, and Smriti can also refer to the Smriti Shastra, which we are meant to keep in our Smriti. Sammoha, Smriti Vibhrama, then Smriti Brahmashad, Buddhi Nasho. When the Smriti is Brahmashad, when our memory is lost, then what happens? Buddhi Nasho. Actually, our intelligence is based on our memory. To the extent we lose our memory, to that extent we lose our intelligence. Then Buddhi Nashat Pranashyati. When we lose our intelligence, then we fall away. Then we fall away from material consciousness, from spiritual consciousness, material consciousness. We fall back to the material pool. So let's try to understand this through example. This is a article that I have written. This is there on my website also. So we'll discuss this in terms of the three stages in which we may fall away. Yeah. So what are these different stages? Not three stages, multiple stages. So first stage is dhyayato, contemplation. So here I've explained all of them. I've used words which all end in ion, tion, for the sake of rhyme also. So first dhyayato is contemplation. I start thinking about certain things. When I contemplate on that, then I develop attraction. Oh, that's nice. That's nice. Sangha. And that's nice. Then after that, there is obsession. I want it. That's karma. And then when there is karma, then what happens? There is irritation. There's infuriation. He says, who can stop me from getting it? I say, no, you cannot get it. You don't have the money. Oh, you don't have the... it's immoral. You should not be doing it. It'll cause bombing. I don't care. There's irritation. Who can stop me? So, here, normally speaking, we often say that when lust is unfulfilled, it leads to greed. That leads to anger. That is definitely true. You know, sometimes when there is some love affair, and if there is a love triangle, you know, two boys loving one girl, then the two boys may fight with each other and they may kill each other also. One of them may kill another. Or say if a boy loves a girl and then the girl says no to the boy may go in a fit of anger, may throw acid on the face of the girl and try to destroy her face. If I can't enjoy you, nobody can enjoy. So all these things happen. What is this? When lust is frustrated, then lust explodes as anger. So now here, Krishna is talking about, he's not talking about that kind of actions. They may be there. But here he's talking right now of of the sequence of by which one falls away. So when we contemplate, we become infatuated, we become attracted, and then we become obsessed. And at this time of obsession, whatever is there, which is perceived as an obstacle to the fulfillment of our desire, then we feel anger towards that. Irritation, that is krodha. And when there is irritation, from that comes delusion, sammoha. So when sammoha comes, sammoha means one becomes confused. One doesn't know what to do. What should I do? What should I not do? Then after that, sammoha, then there is oblivion. Oblivion means smriti brahmashad. Oblivion is forgetfulness. So one doesn't know what I should do. So delusion means one is undecided, but oblivion means when we are undecided, we should be able to turn towards scripture. But at this stage, one is not able to turn towards scripture. And there's oblivion, then there is stupefaction. Stupefaction means we become stupid. Our buddhi is destroyed. Dinasha. And then after that, there is destruction. One pranashyati, one falls away. So in this way, this is the sequence by which one falls away from the spiritual level of consciousness to the sensual level. One falls away to sense gratification. So when this happens, in this way, when we fall away, so what can we do at this stage? So actually, there is a process by which we fall, and there is a process by which we can check ourselves. So is this irreversible? Is this unstoppable? From contemplation to destruction. Is it unstoppable or irreversible? No. It is possible. We can stop it and we can reverse it also. So, to understand this, let's consider the example of a horse. Now, if a person is on a horse, or the more common examples, let's say a chariot.
So in chariot, generally there are several horses, four or five horses, say. So like that, we are sitting in the chariot of the body, we have five senses. So either way, if I take an example of a horse or of a chariot. So if I am on a horse, say, then I am riding on the horse and I am keeping the horse to, I am guiding the horse to go in a particular direction, straight direction. But at that time, the horse catches sight of something. Say there's something attractive, maybe some vegetable is there, some juicy vegetable is there, something nice to eat is there, and the horse starts looking in that direction. Now, when the horse starts looking in that direction, I want it. Then, now actually in between there is a ditch, and if the horse goes into the ditch, the horse may throw me off, and the horse may itself get injured. But the horse is so caught by what it sees over there, it starts running in that direction. So, and when the horse catches speed, after the horse has caught speed, then to bring it under control is much more difficult. Initially, when the horse started looking in that direction, just one pull with the reins and the horse head is pulled away from that and the horse focuses. But when the horse starts running in that direction, it gains a momentum. It gains a momentum and starts charging. At that time, to bring it back under control is much more difficult. And the greater the momentum it has got, greater will be the exertion required to bring the horse back under control. Now the important point is, even if the horse goes there and jump and goes into the ditch to get that particular vegetable or whatever is there, and then if we are thrown off, the horse also is, maybe it gets injured. Even after all that, we can still get up. We can still raise the horse up. Then, if the horse was not injured, we can still get it to mount, bring it out of the ditch, mount on it, and keep moving forward. If the horse is injured, we may have to treat it, and then we can move forward. So, even if the horse actually goes out of control, and it knocks us off, still we can get back, and still we can keep moving forward. So, it's never too late. We can always come back and make a fresh start. But, how much more trouble it is if there is, if the horse had been controlled earlier in the beginning, then it would have been so much easier. Just don't look, first of all, if you keep the horse fixed, that's why they have on the horse head, they also have coverings, maybe the horse can't look in too many directions. So if we don't let the horse look away in too many directions, that keeps it focused also. So, and even if the horse looks, at that time bring it back under control. But if we let the horse go out of control, then it's so much more trouble. That's why the earlier we bring the horse in the control, the better it is. So, like from the stage of contemplation to the stage of destruction, it becomes more and more difficult to control. But at all stages, it is possible to control. All that we need is some steady determination. And another example to illustrate how this is difficult as it moves forward is that of how a snowball is formed. Now, when a snowball is being formed, initially there will be some small pebble of snow. Small pebble of snow. It starts rolling on the ground. And now, if somebody is there on the top of the hill from which the snowball is rolling down, and that person will just kick it, just offer one kick to it, and tuck, it will just break off. It will be shattered. That is the end of the snowball. But if nobody does that at that time, the snowball starts rolling down, 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 down. And as it rolls down, it more and more snow sticks to it. And more snow sticks to it, it becomes bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And by the time the snowball comes down, if somebody, far from somebody kicking it, the same person who could have just kicked it and broken it, now that person may be steamrolled by it. It may just crush the, knock that person over, roll over it and crush and mangle the person sometimes. So, what has happened? The same snow, at that place it was so small. By the time it comes down, it has become so big. The same with our negative thoughts. Now, when one desire comes in, at that, no, nothing doing. Just say, I won't contemplate on it. Then, that's the end of it. But once we start contemplating on it, then what essentially happens by contemplation is our imagination gets triggered. See, Krishna, the Bhagavad Gita, being the words of Krishna, every word is very carefully chosen.
The word is dhyayato vishayan pumsa. It is not drushyato vishayan pumsa or pashyato vishayan pumsa. It is, Krishna is not saying, one, when we see the sense objects, we can't walk in the world with blindfolds. We can't avoid seeing the sense objects. The problem is not seeing the sense objects. The problem is contemplating. What is the difference between seeing and contemplating? When we see and we let our imagination run wild, that is where contemplation begins. That is what contemplation essentially means. So, actually speaking, we see so many things. Now, I see this table. Now, when I see the table, it is not that when I see the table, I start imagining, oh, you know, I want a table like this. Why does this person have a table like this? That person has a bigger table than me. I should have a bigger table. Now, if some person gets a whole set of imagination like that, somebody else doesn't get any imagination like that. Now, who gets imagination, who doesn't get imagination? That will depend on past attachment. If a person is a drunkard, then as soon as one sees alcohol, then immediately the mind just goes on it's a Olympic medal sprint. It starts running so fast at full speed, thinking of this, thinking of that. It may run at the speed of light, practically speaking. So, that's because there is attachment. So, now when Krishna says, dhyayato vishayanpumsa sangasteshu pajayate, attachment developed. Now, that attachment, this can be, if you are first time perceiving the sense objects, then also contemplation can lead to attachment. Or otherwise, it can also refer to how, because we had previous attachments, but those attachments are dormant. And then when there is contemplation, those attachments become awakened. So it can be either way. But the important point is that the senses need to be, we need to avoid contemplation of the sense objects. So we don't have to squelch or suppress our imagination. We can spiritualize our imagination. You know, we can think about the beautiful darshan of Krishna. We can think of the services that we can do for Krishna. We can think of how we can study the scriptures nicely, how we'll chant nicely, how we will share Krishna's message powerfully. So we can think of such things. We can spiritualize our imagination. Now, we may say, but isn't it that I'm thinking of my own glory? I think I'll become a very good distributor. I'll become a very good preacher. I'll become the very good thing. No, we have to engage our imagination. And it is not wrong for a person to think that I want to become a good devotee. You know, we all want to become good devotees. And being a good devotee involves, we want to become good teachers of Krishna consciousness. We want to become good singers, good pujaris, good cooks, good managers, whatever services we are doing. It's perfectly okay to desire to be good devotees and be good in the services that we want to do. So that is not a egoistic imagination. Certainly, some element of ego may be there. When I want to speak Krishna's message powerfully, I may also want that. You know, I want people to praise me. People should think how clever I am, how learned I am. So that may be there. But just because of the fear of that, we shouldn't avoid thinking that I want to do services nicely for Krishna. What we should do is, we should do the services nicely, but we want to do them nicely for Krishna's pleasure, not for our own praise. So when the praise comes, we basically accept it. Thank you. Thank you for encouraging me. Whatever I'm able to do, it is by Krishna's mercy. It is by a devotee's mercy. So that way, when we have this cultured attitude towards Krishna consciousness, towards our performance of devotional service, then we will stay without being infatuated by pride. But if we don't use our imagination spiritually, then by default the imagination will go materially. So actually envisioning that, yes, we want to have a wonderful program. If I am an organizer or a teacher in a program, at that time I may want to think, as you know, this hall is there, this whole hall should be filled. And somebody is doing follow-up. If you are going to some hostel for college students, or if you are going to some homes, you know, devotee doesn't just see buildings of concrete and metal. A devotee sees, oh, these are all homes of potential devotees. So we develop that vision, and that's how, you know, we see a person, we think, oh, how wonderful this person would be and this person also became a devotee. So that way, we can spiritualize our imagination. So when we spiritualize our imagination, then we give some avenue for our imagination to move forward. If we don't spiritualize our imagination, then what will our imagination do? Where will it go? It has to go somewhere. If it doesn't go towards Krishna, the imagination will go towards Maya. And we'll be thinking of sensual things. So therefore, we can spiritualize our imagination and that way dovetail the imagination propensity of the mind also. But when we contemplate on the sense objects, then the imagination develops, imagination leads to the development of attachment. And from that point onwards, we start falling. Now at any place we can check ourselves. It is not that we have to check ourselves only after we fall. Actually, even if the imagination dhyayatuvyam sangasteshu pajayate. So sangha has developed, krodha has also developed. Even after that also we can check ourselves. So at any stage, when we start feeling irritated. Actually, when we start feeling irritated at whatever obstacles are there because of which we are not able to enjoy the senses. You know, there are certain rules which don't allow us to enjoy. And there are certain other people in the room who don't allow me to do what I want to do. Or whatever factors are there because of which we can't enjoy. At that time, instead of becoming angry at those obstacles which block our sense gratification, we can redirect the anger toward the mind and the senses. Why are you craving for such things which are not going to make me happy? You know, I've done these things so many times and all that I've got is just a little pleasure followed by guilt, followed by emptiness, followed by frustration, followed by lower consciousness, followed by greater disconnection from Krishna. Why should I get into all this? So actually, our indulgence in sense gratification, what does it do? Yes, if it's immoral, it'll lead to karmic consequences also. But more importantly, from our immediate perspective also, it steals away our taste in Krishna consciousness. What happens is when we engage in sense gratification, at that time we come down to material consciousness. When we come down to material consciousness, by coming down to material consciousness, we cut ourselves off from spiritual consciousness. And when we cut ourselves off from spiritual consciousness, then we can't perceive Krishna. When we can't perceive Krishna, we can't relish Krishna also at that time. So that's why it's important for us to recognize that I have to redirect my anger from the sense objects, from the obstacles to sense gratification, to the things which are creating the desire for sense gratification, the mind and the senses. And that way we can purify ourselves. We can bring ourselves back under control. So we'll continue this discussion in our next class. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.